standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Brady Phillips. Thank you, and you may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, which is part of the suite of climate services NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. Again, my name is Brady Phillips, a public affairs officer with NOAA's Office of Communication in Washington, and I'll be facilitating the call today. So today's update will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. And a copy of the presentation that will follow in this call can be found online at www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. That's briefings. Our first presenter today is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at the Climate Monitoring Branch in NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll provide a summary of the June U.S. and global climate reports. The next presenter is Nancy Sellover, the Arizona State climatologist at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona, who will discuss some of the record-breaking heat across the Southwest in June and some explanations of the current monsoon season that is going on. Our final presenter will be Dan Collins, a meteorologist and seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, Operational Prediction Branch in College Park, Maryland, who will provide a La Nina update as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks over the coming 3 months. So we'll begin with Jake Crouch from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. Jake?
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start off speaking to slide number 2 in the slide deck that you can download from our website. Looking at the June global temperatures for 2016, this report was released a few days ago, but June 2016 was the warmest June on record for the globe. The globally average temperature over land and ocean surfaces was 0.9 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average. This marked the 14th consecutive month that we've had record warm temperatures for the globe. If we look at the map on the right, we can see areas of the globe that were record warm in the brightest color red, and areas of the globe that were much warmer than average during the month of June in the next shade of red. We can see that much of the global surface was covered either by much warmer than average or record warm temperatures. A few exceptions, we did have pretty cool temperatures across South America and off the Antarctica coast during the month of June. And if you notice, too, we've been talking for several months about an area of cold temperatures to the south of Greenland. Those have nearly disappeared during the month of June. Those below-average sea surface temperatures have been present for a long time, and this is the first month that they've shown any type of dissipation. On a national scale, Australia had its sixth warmest June. New Zealand had its third warmest. And in Hong Kong, it was exceptionally warm in Hong Kong. They had their second warmest June, and they had 4 days over 95 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the longest such consecutive streak on record there. Breaking out the land and ocean surfaces separately for June, both were record warm during the month. The land surface tied June, the warmest June on record, which occurred last year in 2015, and the ocean surface continued to be record warm, which has been the case for over a year now. Moving on to slide number 3 to look at year-to-date temperatures for the globe. This graphic shows cumulative year-to-date temperatures throughout the year for 2016 in the black line and for the other top 7 ultimately warmest years for the globe. So as you move from left to right in the graphic, each point in that line will include the data for the previous points in the year. So the line for 2016 shows how global temperatures have progressed from January through June, and we can see that 2016 is quite a bit above 2015, which was ultimately the warmest year on record up to that point. And we're about 0.2 degrees Celsius above where we were at this point last year. And so 2016 being so much warmer than 2015, it is likely that we will see another record warm year. That means 2016 will follow 2015 and 2014 as the warmest years on record and will be the third consecutive time that we've had a record warm year for the globe. Moving on to slide number 4 to talk about the contiguous U.S. during the month of June. The contiguous U.S., just like the globe, was record warm. National temperature was 71.8 degrees Fahrenheit, 3.3 degrees above average, and this bested the previous record warm June that occurred in 1933, so right at the beginning of the Dust Bowl years. The graphic on the left shows statewide temperature ranks. We can see much of the warmth during June was situated across the West, Great Plains, and parts of the Southeast. And Utah and Arizona were both record warm, and Nancy will discuss the record warm temperatures in the Southwest in more detail. We did have near-average temperatures during the month across the Northeast and the Southern Plains, but the parts of the U.S. that were really warm dominated the nationally average temperature, boosting us to the record territory for the month. In terms of precipitation, nationally, we were 14th driest on record. We did have below-average precipitation across the Central and Northern Plains and Northeast, where we had expanding drought conditions. We had above-average precipitation across parts of the Southwest, Southern Plains, Upper Midwest, and the Mid-Atlantic. And we have to also discuss the record flooding that impacted parts of southern West Virginia, my home state. Unfortunately, there were 23 fatalities there, 15 in the town of Raynell, and over 1,500 homes destroyed with that flooding. Moving on to slide number 5 to discuss the conditions in Alaska. It has been exceptionally warm in Alaska during 2016 so far. The statewide average temperature is 9 degrees above average, and it surpassed the previous record that occurred in 1981 by quite a wide margin. The graphic on the left actually does show a scale of different temperatures, but it has been so warm in Alaska that the temperatures are literally off the chart. Looking at the time series on the right, for data for Alaska back to 1925, so 92 years of data, we can see how 2016 is really just blowing away the rest of the pack in terms of temperatures in that part of the globe. My last slide, slide number 6, I'm going to discuss the current U.S. drought monitor, which came out this morning. 18.8% of the lower 48 is in drought, and this is up about 6% during late May. It is typical that we do see expanding drought conditions during the summer months. During the month, we did see slight drought improvements across parts of the Great Basin and Mid-Atlantic, with degradation of drought conditions across the Northwest, Northern Plains, especially also in the Southeast and Northeast, where drought conditions have really exploded during the past couple of weeks to months. And outside of the contiguous U.S., with the weakening and the dissipation of the El Nino, we have seen wet conditions return to Hawaii, with drought conditions improving quite drastically across that state. And with that, I will hand it off to Nancy.
Thank you very much. This is Nancy Silver. I'm going to talk, my first slide is number 7. We're going to look at the heat wave. The worst heat wave we had for the month happened on June 20th, 21st. That was when we were sort of predicted we were going to be maybe 122 in Phoenix, 121. It turned out to be 118, but that's still the fifth hottest that we've had. The maps that I've shown are giving you an indication of where the high pressure was and how strong it was. The contour of 5,940 meters for a G potential height is our indication of how strong the high pressure was. The one on the left is what we had this June 20th. The previous one from 2013 over on the right is when we reached 119 degrees, and it's a similar situation, but we had an even broader high-pressure system happening this year, which meant that that heat wave was felt in a lot larger area. It went all the way, actually, even up into Wyoming. They were having record, tying records. So essentially, Yuma to Pueblo, Colorado, from north to south, Burbank, all the way over to Santa Fe, we were setting records. And there's a few of those high-temperature records that were set that I have listed right there. We set daily records for those days in Phoenix area. For the whole month, we had six maximum temperature records that were set. Tucson had 4, Flagstaff had 3. And in Phoenix, we had some high minimum temperatures as well, 90 degrees or warmer, which is what was going on. And I'll get back to a little bit of this in a later slide. If we move on to slide number 8, we'll talk a little bit about this again and then transfer into the monsoon. The temperature map on the left side, in the dark red, you're looking at 104 degrees or above for temperature, and the pink is about 92 to 96 degrees. So you're seeing it was quite extensive, the heat that we were having in June, and as you saw before, that the Arizona and Utah statewide had their warmest month ever. And that was a lot because of this specific heat wave that we had at this point. If we look at the map for precipitation on the right, white areas are less than a hundredth of an inch. That's not unusual for certainly Southern California, and most of California doesn't get much summer rainfall. In Arizona, June is usually a very dry month, although if you look down in the southeastern corner of Arizona, you'll see some green. The legend says that's 1.2 to 1.6 inches of precipitation. Most of the areas of Arizona didn't quite get that much. There was only one spot that really did get that much for the month. But we typically have almost nothing. So in the sort of lower center picture of the southwest, the percentage of average map, those red numbers are less than 5% of average, which was a lot of the really dry areas that actually basically got nothing. And then we had a little bit of precipitation that happened in the southeast, and that jumped us up to 150% of average, and in some cases 300% of average. So since we're typically dry, a very small amount of rain that we get is going to send us way up in percent of average. We move to the slide number 9, a little look at the monsoon. The Sky Harbor Phoenix dew point is the map on the, or the graph on the top left. El Paso is on the top right. And if you look at the Phoenix one on the left, you will see about 55 degrees. You'll see a green line running across. And that is where we have defined our monsoon historically as when we have temperature or dew points above 55 degrees, we're in a really humid condition, evaporative coolers don't work, and really the monsoon strikes. And that's when we can typically get our precipitation. So what you see is once we got to the end of June, we jumped up over that. We started our monsoon from the historic definition. We only had 7 days with that really high dew point. Then we dropped into what we call a break period, and it's lasted 14 days that we were below 55 dew points. It was very, very hot, and we had more of those high temperatures, 110 or greater, across the state. And then only recently, in the past 3 days, we've jumped back up and into a really humid condition, into the 60s for dew points. El Paso's had the same sort of situation, so it isn't just something that's happened in the Phoenix area or in Arizona. It's kind of across the southwest. That monsoon had stopped. And part of that, if you remember those where those high pressures were, that high pressure sitting over us was giving us westerly flow, which is fairly dry for us. Now you can see on the lower left that picture, the highs moved over to the east, and that's allowed the circulation to bring that moisture up from Mexico up into Arizona and New Mexico and the southwest. So the monsoon kind of kicked off again. On the far right at the bottom, that's a precipitable water map, and the blue is in the vicinity of 2 inches of precipitable water, which is huge, and that's what we've had the past 3 days. And so we've had some really torrential rains, very, very spotty, however. I think some of you may have seen we had a picture of a microburst that happened in Phoenix that was quite a classic picture, and it happened a couple miles from my house, and mud came down the mountain, and there was mud in the streets, and it was quite messy, but it was very, very isolated, only a couple of miles across. So that kind of started it. We were all excited that we were going to come back to this moist pattern, and now all of a sudden we're drying out again. So right now we're looking at another heat wave starting Friday and Saturday. We have excessive heat warnings. We're looking at 112 to 116. So far this summer, we've had 20 days of 110 or hotter in the Phoenix area. Our record is 33 days in 2011. And so we're looking to go back to that dry pattern. The center map is a sea surface temperature map down on the bottom. And I put that in there only because I'm looking as we move forward. I'm not anticipating this is going to be a wetter than average monsoon. In fact, it may be drier than average, in my opinion, because we're not having as high as sea surface temperatures. There's not as much evaporation and not as much atmospheric moisture, notwithstanding the particular instance that happened the last couple of days. But it doesn't look like over the long term for the summer, for me, that we're going to have a really wet situation. But we'll find out what Dan thinks. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan Collins at CPC.
Thank you. I'm beginning with slide number 10, sea surface temperatures and ENSO outlook. So on the upper left, you see a map of the current sea surface temperatures with the contours for anomalies. You see that there's an area of below normal sea surface temperatures that's been observed for about 2 months in the eastern equatorial Pacific, right there along the equator, from near the dateline to the South American coast. then you see broadly across the tropics that the temperatures remain above normal for the long-term averages over much of the tropics, but as Nancy pointed out, not quite as warm as we had in some previous months. There are cooler waters below the surface if you look down to depths of 200 meters, and this is possibly going to lead into development of La Nina, which is what happens as the surface temperatures cool off along the equator. The forecast for ENSO, the El Nino Southern Oscillation, in the lower left, you see the probabilistic forecast for each of the three categories of the ENSO forecast, either El Nino or the red bars, neutral conditions, neither El Nino or La Nina is green bars, with probability on the left axis, and La Nina are the blue bars. And what you see is that the recent El Nino of 2015-2016, which brought us record warm temperatures, well, not necessarily record, but near record warmth across the tropical Pacific, that's ended. And a transition to La Nina is considered likely now, beginning with late summer in the coming season and as we go into the beginning of winter. The probability of La Nina forming is considered to be greater than 50% with the coming three-month period, and then it rises to above 60% as we approach winter. So now I'm moving to slide number 11, and this shows the monthly forecast for August. On the left, you see a map for probabilities of above normal temperature, or you would see below normal temperature probabilities if that was the favored category in blue. Areas where we show EC means that there's an equal chance of above normal or below normal or near normal, as these maps portray categories as three equal categories, equally likely categories in the past. So what you see is that there's broadly areas of above normal being favored with probabilities exceeding 50% in the southwest of the U.S. as well as along the southern coast of Alaska. You see areas of equal chances where above normal is not favored in the center of the country across the northern plains and into the Great Lakes region, and you also see that in the south of Texas. Those regions are in part impacted by above normal soil moisture, which is currently there in parts of the plain states. It's also indicated in some of the shorter range forecasts for the beginning of August that there should be below or near normal temperatures in these regions. So in these regions, above normal is not favored, but otherwise the map shows generally that above normal temperatures are favored for the month of August. On the right, you see the probability of precipitation being either above normal or below normal or in areas of white, equal chances. You see that there is a prediction of above normal precipitation for the monsoon region for August, for at least parts of the region, as well as an area of enhanced probabilities of above normal precipitation from the northern plains down into the central Mississippi Valley. You also see above normal precipitation forecast for southeast Alaska and the Alaska Panhandle. And then there are regions where below normal precipitation is more likely, such as the Pacific Northwest, parts of the northern Great Lakes, and along the central Gulf Coast. I'm now going to move to slide number 12, which is our seasonal forecast outlook for the months of August, September, and October. So this three-month outlook indicates that on the left you can see the forecast for probability of temperature being above normal. There are no areas where the below normal is more likely than above normal. And also the probabilities exceed 40% across the map, as well as exceeding 50% likelihood of being in the above normal third of historical temperatures for the months of August, September, October combined. You see high probabilities along the west and southern coast of Alaska, sea surface temperatures are above normal along the Alaska coast, and this is part of the what is factored into this forecast for above normal in that region. There's some weaknesses, again, in the probabilities in the sense that it is not quite as likely for above normal temperatures in parts of the west to the west of the Rockies. Sea surface temperatures have cooled off the coast of California, and that is in part impacting the forecast for that region. Also, through the central plains, you see a lower probability. Again, soil moisture is a factor in reducing the probabilities there. If you look at the map in the right, you see that there is an area of increased probabilities of above normal precipitation, again, for southeastern Alaska and the Alaska Panhandle. This is somewhat influenced also by sea surface temperatures off the coast and the predicted circulation pattern indicating storm track through that area. You also see a similar area that we had in the monthly outlook in the August, September, October outlook for above normal precipitation in the northern central plains, but not quite as extensive. You see some small areas of above normal precipitation indicated along the Gulf Coast of Texas and the southern Florida Peninsula. There's expectation with the potential development of La Nina for an enhanced tropical storm activity, but this is a difficult to forecast aspect of the climate, and so only a slight tilt in the odds towards above normal in some regions of the Gulf Coast. Otherwise, there's a increased chance of below normal in interior regions of the southeast in the precipitation outlook. So now I'm going to move to the drought outlook, which is slide number 13. So looking at the seasonal drought outlook, which is the three-month period beginning today, you see that there in the Pacific Northwest, the development of drought is likely in abnormally dry areas of the Pacific Northwest. As you saw in the previous outlooks, there's generally a increased chance of above normal temperatures in this region, as well as an increased chance of below normal precipitation in this region. And so that leads to a likely development of drought in parts of the Pacific Northwest, just eastern parts of Washington, northern Idaho, western Montana. In the Southwest, in the monsoon region, you see that drought removal is likely in parts of Arizona and New Mexico. This is in part due to the short-range forecasts that indicate above normal precipitation, as well as normal monsoon activity would also lead to some reduction in drought in this region. There's also a reduction or removal of drought likely in parts of the northern plains. Again, the forecasts for the coming month and season indicate above normal precipitation in this region. In the southeast, on the other hand, interior regions have been abnormally dry, and drought development is likely in the southeast, as the forecast is for below normal precipitation in this region. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Brady.
Thank you, Dan. We'll now take specific questions from the call participants. Again, please be sure to indicate if you know who you'd like to answer the question. And operator, can you remind folks how to ask a question and queue up the first question?
Sure. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. And our first question is from Seth Bornstein from the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you. This is for Dan Collins. Looking at slide 12, the left side, the three-month outlook temperature. First off, I can't recall any time before where I've seen the entire United States, continental U.S. and Alaska being forecast for above normal. And one is, how unusual is this? If it's unusual, maybe I'm remembering wrong. And two, you talked about why, for example, the plains might and California might be lower, but didn't tell us just why you've got such a orange-red outlook in general there, especially, you know, with El Nino, you know, gone and trending toward, but not in, and La Nina. So I'm trying to understand what is the factor that's causing it to be, the outlook to be so damn hot, given, you know, what we're facing this weekend for much of the U.S.?
Yeah, so I guess as to the first part of your question, I'd have to check for you if we've ever done this outlook before with above normal in every single region of the contiguous United States and Alaska.
Yeah. I mean, is there, and there's no place, it's fair to say, and I think you said it, there is no place in the United States, I guess, I mean, you don't have a Y, and if you could tell me if a Y is this way, is there any place in the U.S. that is not likely to be above normal for the 3 months?
The outlook, I guess, speaks for itself. I'm not sure if I'm clear on what you're asking. The above normal is most likely, and where we exceed 50%, that means that it's more likely than not. Because it's a three-category system, those areas where there's a weaker probability, you know, it could be near or it could be below in those areas, but above is the most likely, again, you know, of what we expect. And so why is the tilting in this direction? Primarily, sea surface temperatures are broadly warm across much of the Pacific, the North Pacific, and across the tropics as well. There has been a tendency towards cooling, and there's a cooling in the long, there's below normal temperatures along the equator. But we give a 50-50 chance, basically, of La Nina developing in this season, we're not expecting much in the way of impacts of that development initially in August, September, October. So really, the outlook that you're seeing here is the result of dynamical model forecasts, interpretation of the broad sea surface, warm sea surface temperatures across the Pacific Ocean. And part of that is, of course, climate change, and that we're comparing these temperatures, so a more technical issue, we're comparing these temperatures to the 30-year period from 1981 to 2010. And currently, as you saw in Jake's previous slides, we've had a period of warmth broadly across the globe for this past year, and relative to that 30-year period, the forecasts are indicating that generally above normal is more likely than not.
Okay. If it's possible to check to see if this has happened before, if you've had this type of
thing. I will try to do that.
Brady knows how to get hold of me.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
Next question, operator.
Next question is from Doyle Rice from USA Today. Your line is now open.
Hi, all. Thanks for doing this. I guess this is a question for Jake. I just wondered if, as far as the actual temperature goes, did June crack like the top 10? As I recall, like all the top 10 are always Julys, and I just wondered if maybe if that was the first time a June had actually beaten July, and also what the likelihood then of July being the warmest July and possibly the warmest month of all time.
Hey, this is Jake. I don't have that number off the top of my head. I'm seeing if I can find it. You're right that July is typically the when we reach the warmest month globally. In terms of departures from average, so just looking at the anomaly, June 2016 was the ninth highest. But when we look at absolute temperatures, I don't have a list of what those warmest are.
Okay, if you can get that to me, that'd be helpful.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Next question is from Curtis Alexander from the San Francisco Chronicle. Your line is now open.
Good morning. I think this is probably a question for Dan. Dan, you mentioned that the odds still favor the development of a La Nina, but it seemed that some of the recent forecasts seem to have downgraded the probability of a La Nina forming and its potential strength. I was wondering why that might be the case and what the implication might be for precipitation and drought in the upcoming year, primarily on the West Coast.
Sure. Yes, the probability has dropped a bit, about from 70% to 60% over the course of the last month's outlook. This is primarily tracking various forecasts, dynamical model forecasts, statistical forecasts. And so what you see when you look at those forecasts is an envelope of forecasts that is kind of centered around the threshold that we consider to be La Nina, which is where the east central tropical Pacific has a temperature below negative 0.5 degrees Celsius or half a degree Celsius below normal. And so the forecasts actually are kind of somewhat split around that threshold. And so if La Nina develops, currently weak or moderate is what's most likely. And as I said, relative to last month, those forecasts have shifted just a bit and weakened. That could have various reasons, but in part, we also see there's a broad area of below normal sea surface, not sea surface temperature, below normal temperatures in the ocean waters below the surface, and that often leads to the development of La Nina. However, those temperatures themselves, as they've surfaced some in the eastern equatorial Pacific, they've also decreased in magnitude a bit and aren't quite as cool as they had been in the previous months. So currently, you know, again, this, as you said, it's still a tilt in the odds towards La Nina. It's greater than 50% going forward, but it's moderated a bit in terms of the likelihood and perhaps the strength.
Now, does that affect your forecast for?
Yeah, that's right. You asked how it affected the forecast. So in terms of the outlooks going forward, the impact of La Nina was moderated a little bit in the first couple leads or so, and you know, small tweaks perhaps going into winter, because La Nina is expected to be the primary factor in the as we go into late autumn and winter in the climate outlook. Overall, the picture in those outlooks is very similar to what we had in the last couple months, because again, it is the most likely to occur. It is above a 50% likelihood to occur, and as I said, it is expected to be the most important factor at the current time.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
I'd like to remind all participants at this time, if you have a question, please press star 1. Next question is from Bryce Anderson from DTN AG News. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the briefing. This question is for Dan Collins. And Dan, earlier this year in the commodity field that I deal with, there were some very well-publicized forecasts from different private individuals calling for La Nina to develop by June and then become a very strong event, kind of an actual exact opposite of the strong El Nino. That hasn't happened. Could I get any reaction from you to how things played out for such a feature to not develop and for effectively some of those calls to be, you know, shown to be very erroneous?
Sure. I haven't really referred to all of it, despite the fact that you say it's well published, publicized, I haven't referred to all of these past predictions. But in any case, that does occur. If you were to look back, though, at the official outlooks through Climate Prediction Center and NOAA, you would see that there was a much more moderate perspective on the development of La Nina going back several months, though the probability of La Nina has dropped a little bit in the last 2 months. It's never been, said that a very strong event was likely. It's very difficult to make that prediction early on. Though there are strong La Niñas following strong El Niños sometimes, that's actually not always the case if you look back in the historical record. So there are cases where the La Niña that often does follow El Niño, as we have pointed out, is not necessarily stronger if the El Niño prior to that in the prior year was a strong event. So simply because this was a historically strong El Niño does not necessarily lead to a strong La Niña following. And so some may have thought that was a possibility, and it certainly was. Right now it doesn't seem as likely.
Okay, thank you.
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
And can you remind folks how to ask a question, operator? Thanks.
Sure. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1.
Okay, last call for questions. Okay, if not, I'll wrap up. We've got several upcoming announcements coming. Actually, we do have one question. Operator, can you queue it up? Thanks.
Sure. Next question is from Joe White from ADNET. Your line is now open.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for putting this on. Just curious what your thoughts are with respect to how much El Nino added to the increase in the temperature so far for 2016. Do you have sort of a round number of generally what El Niños do?
This is Jake. I don't have a specific number, but I think that the contribution to El Niño was a few tenths of a degree. So it did help boost 2015 and 2016 above the long-term trend in terms of the warming that we've seen in the global temperature. I'd say it was a few tenths of a degree, that the extra of a boost, but that was not the only reason we had a record warm year in 2015, or why we are likely to have a record warm year in 2016. It's both a combination of the long-term warming and this climate variable known as El Niño.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Again, last call for questions, or I will wrap it up. Okay. I just as a reminder, so the report on the U.S. Climate highlights for the month of July will be released on August 8th, and the July global climate highlights will be released on August 17th. We will have our next monthly climate call on Thursday, August 18th at 11 o'clock a.m. Also coming up soon, the exact date is still to be determined, but the publication of the State of the Climate in 2015 report in a special edition of the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society is likely to be August 2nd. We will send out a separate media advisory and a press release for that specific event. And then finally, on August 11th, NOAA will provide an update to its Atlantic hurricane seasonal outlook. As we gear up into the height of the activity for the Atlantic, we do provide this kind of update as to what we will be looking at. Again, a separate media outlook will be provided for that. And finally, if you're looking for the audio from today's call, it will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory website, and it will be a downloadable audio file. In the interim, if you have further questions or need follow-up, please don't hesitate to give me an email or call, brady.phillips, that's brady.phillips@noaa.gov. Or you can also call or email John Leslie at john.leslie@noaa.gov. This concludes the call. Thank you very much and have a great day. And stay cool.